Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Everybody doing okay?
Yeah.
I think maybe it's my own thing, but today I'm going to invite you to turn to your neighbor and say, whatever you are facing today, you are not alone.
Whatever you are facing today.
Whatever you are facing today, you are not alone.
All right, well, today we are going to return to Matthew 6, but before we get there, thank you, Eva Joy and Moses, for leading worship, and now for Children's Church. So,
yes.
You are dismissed, released, free to go. And at some point, Eva Joy, somebody will come get you for the closing.
What?
At some point, somebody will get you for the closing talk.
Sure. Yeah. We'll be outside.
All right, well, today we are returning to Matthew 6 and the Sermon on the Mount. Thank you to Aaron for sharing with us these last 2 weeks. It's always much appreciated and meaningful. It's been a few weeks away, so by way of remembrance and to get us all on the same page, Jesus, he is up on the mountain. He is teaching. His disciples, his Talmudim have gathered around. He is teaching what amounts to an invitation, inviting us to enter into a whole other way of doing life and relationships. Keeping in mind, Jesus, his call was to come follow me. Right? The call of Jesus was come follow me. I don't mean this pejoratively, but it was never to bow your head, close your eyes, and repeat after me. It was always, come, follow me. Come, follow me in this way of doing life and relationships. What is a way of life and relationships that really flows out from the Torah, right? The Jesus backstory that is the Torah. The Torah, again, being the first 5 books of our Bible. So Jesus makes it very clear. He says, do not think I have come to abolish, right? To do away with, to cancel, to get rid of. Kataluo in the Greek. Do not think I've come to cancel, to do away with the Torah or the Nevi'im, the prophets. Torah and Nevi'im, a shorthand for the Tanakh, what is the whole of the Old Testament to you and me. And Jesus says, do not think I've come to do away with that, to get rid of it, to cancel it. Not at all. He says, I have come to play a role, to fulfill, to uncover, to reveal, to express the true intent, the deeper heart, the deeper understanding, to show us God's heart. What is a way for you and me that travels the path of righteousness? A righteousness, Jesus says, that surpasses that of even the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, the scribes. Noting again here, surpassing does not mean do more or do better, but it means do different. In the words of the scholar R.T. France, he writes, it is a different concept of righteousness altogether, a different understanding of how we should live as the people of God. And so be careful, Jesus says. Be careful not to practice your righteousness. Be careful not to practice poieo in the Greek, meaning to do or to make, but with it, it also has the sense of perform, of making a performance. And so Jesus says very clearly, be careful not to perform your righteousness in front of others, in the presence of others, to be seen by them. Right, to be admired, to be praised, to be exalted by them. And by way of example then, most recently here, Jesus, he dives into what are three ancient expressions of righteousness. What are considered to be in Judaism what were considered to be the three great pillars. As the scholar Leon Morris writes, all three, and by all three he means almsgiving, prayer, and fasting, all three were part of the devotional life. Each was intended to deepen communion with God, but each could also be distorted when done to impress others. And it was that righteousness that we looked at several weeks ago, Eleosune, Sedeka, right? This almsgiving. Jesus says, not if, but when you give to those in need. And then that was followed now 3 weeks ago with prayer, right? Again, and when, not if, but when you pray, right? We are to be a people who pray. Now, you can always go back and listen online or through iTunes. Today, we come then to verse 9. Jesus continues. And I would like to invite us this morning to say this together, kind of as our opening prayer together. Jesus says, this then is how you should pray. And so together, our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. Amen. And so again, Jesus, his disciples have gathered around, his Talmudim gathered around. This then, he says, right, is how you should pray. Meant not so much as a command, as the scholar Michael Wilkins tells us, not so much as a command, but as an invitation to share in the prayer life of Jesus himself. And so with that in mind, over the next several weeks, maybe probably more like a month, maybe a couple months, maybe all summer, I want to invite us to do just that, to enter into with Jesus this prayer, the prayer life of Jesus himself, to in a sense walk together through what is called the Lord's Prayer. Sometimes it's referred to as the Our Father. More recently, because it was given to the disciples, it is often now called the Disciples' Prayer. Now, a couple of things for this morning to kind of draw our attention. And first off, this prayer has a bit of a structure to it, a notable structure to it. It really is presented to us in kind of two halves. The first half centers us on God. The second half then centers or turns to us. In addition, each half comes with three petitions. The first half, it says, we read, hallowed be your name, right? Centering on God, your kingdom come, your will be done. And then the second half, on us, our needs, give us this day our daily bread, forgive us our debts, as we also forgive. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. And so again, there's two halves, three petitions. Your name, your kingdom, your will. And then it turns to us, our bread, our forgiveness, our deliverance. Now with that, the second half here actually has a little bit more to it. Kind of each petition capturing a sphere of time. And so first our bread, and bread being that which is necessary for our sustenance. It's here and it's now. It's always in the present moment. And so it brings the present into the grace of God. The second, our forgiveness. And we can think of that wound or that pain, that suffering that we have endured. Right, and with that, then, it brings the past into the care of God. And then third, our deliverance, asking God for help with temptation. So we think of the future, and we see how the future then is brought into the hands of God. From the scholar William Barclay, he writes, this prayer brings the whole of life to the presence of God, and brings the whole of God to the narrative of our lives. And we see that really in the order of things. Right? Noting it begins, right? Not with us, but with God. It begins with your name, your kingdom, your will. And And then it turns to our, right? Our bread, our forgiveness, our deliverance. Now, I want to say that I don't believe that's meant to minimize our needs at all. Right? Jesus cares about, God cares about our every need. We saw that over the last 2 weeks, right? But it's really meant to be, I think, a reminder that we don't begin there, right? We don't begin, right? Point being, Jesus, he's not saying that stuff doesn't matter. Your needs don't, he's not saying that at all. He's not saying that. He says it does matter. It's just that if we're not careful, if we're not intentional, life can quickly become consumed by all that stuff, that whatever in your face stuff you are dealing with. And pretty soon our perspective begins to change and we become shaped in a different sort of way. Right? We can think of the email. Maybe it's an email that you've been avoiding. Maybe it's that call from the doctor. Maybe it's there's more month than there is money. Maybe it's that news story that you read. Maybe it's a loved one. Maybe it's a conflict with a coworker. Maybe it's an argument, a disagreement with a child, right? Which is perhaps why Jesus says, right, hold on. Yes, that stuff is absolutely important, but not there. We don't begin there. Right? Begin, Jesus says, your name, your kingdom, your will. And then we come to our bread, our forgiveness, our deliverance. And in that sense, I think the scholar William Barclay is right. Prayer, he notes, must never be an attempt to bend the will of God to our desires. Prayer must never be an attempt to bend the will of God to our desires. Prayer ought always to be an attempt to submit our desires to the very will of God. So with that kind of macro structure in the back of your mind, I want to dive down into more on a micro level today and for the next several weeks and kind of take this line by line. And for today, notice, even before all that movement, all that progression, all the petitions, right, verse 9, Jesus is speaking. He says, this then is how you should pray. And notice the very first thing he says, the very first thing we read, our Father in heaven. Now, to kind of get fully behind what he is after here, we need to recognize that what he says here is juxtaposed against what he was saying back in verses 5 through 8, which, if you remember, Jesus was speaking about the hypocrites and the babblers, what we might call the don't-be-likes, or don't be like them. Meaning those who are doing their praying, right? Not if, but when, right? They are doing their praying. But they're doing their praying in such a way as to be seen by others, right? Again, to be praised, right? To be admired, to be exalted. Noting, as we also mentioned, more specifically, that word babbling comes from batalegeo in the Greek. It's only found here in the whole of the New Testament. It is found in the Jewish Book of Wisdom, Sirach 7 and 14. We read there, do not prattle, it's batalegeo. In the assembly of the elders, nor repeat yourself in prayer. Noting again from Morris, to pray at length was regarded by the Gentiles as the way to make sure that one's prayer was appreciated by deity. And it's into that reality then that Jesus says, yeah, don't do that. Right? Don't go on and on. Don't battle the gale. Keeping in mind in the ancient kind of Greco-Roman world, repetition, kind of a formulaic sort of prayer was standard, was common, was typical. This one I mentioned several weeks ago, I thought I would remind you of it. Osiris begins, this is an Egyptian prayer to the god Osiris. Hail to thee, Osiris, Lord of eternity, king of the gods, of many names, of holy forms, secret of manifestations, rich in names, hidden of appearances. It goes on and on, and again, it's over 100 titles and descriptive phrases. On and on. And Jesus speaks into that. He says, yeah, don't do that. Don't go on and on. Don't just repeat and repeat and repeat. Why? He says, for your Father already knows what you need. Your Father already knows what you need. He knows what is necessary but lacking before you even ask Him. So, when you pray, say, Our Father in heaven. Now add to that, Batalageo has a progression to it. There is this sense of repetition, of sort of heaping up phrases, descriptive phrases. It also moves to a more extreme, becoming disjointed, incoherent, becoming unintelligible. We see an example of this in 1 Kings chapter 18. This is Elijah, who is a worshiper of our Father, kind of over and against the prophets of Baal or Baal, let's say either way, 450 in total. And so there's kind of the line has been drawn in the sand, the kind of the space off is about to begin, and so these prophets of Baal, they first begin calling on the name of God, and it says that they would shout out, Oh Baal, answer us. But not just once, this would go on for hours on end. And then we read they start dancing, and then more shouting, and apparently that didn't work, and so they began shouting louder, and then we even read they started slashing themselves with swords and spears. And again, it's into that backdrop that Jesus says, so when you pray, right, our Father in heaven, right, don't babble, don't go on and on. Don't shout and dance and shout louder. Certainly don't start inflicting self-harm. Jesus says, simply say, our Father, right? He knows what you need. Right, that the stress in life, our Father in heaven. That ache that won't let go, our Father in heaven. Right, that pain that lingers, Jesus says, our Father in heaven. That fear that has grabbed hold of you, Jesus says, our Father in heaven. That waiting that seems far too long, Jesus says, our Father in heaven. Now, I think for me, and maybe you can relate, that I can easily get stuck in all of that stuff, in all of that what is in my face sort of stuff. Right, I can very quickly, and I usually do, I go to my struggle, my pain, my worry, my concern, my fear. But again, it's right there, right? Jesus says, hold on, yes, that stuff is important. Absolutely, 100%, but not there. We don't begin there. We begin, Jesus says, our Father in heaven. Whatever it is that we are facing, we begin there, right? The guilt you still carry, our Father in heaven. The grief still unnamed, our Father in heaven. That dream that feels lost, our Father in heaven. The question still unanswered, our Father in heaven. The past that haunts you, our Father in heaven. The future that we can't quite see yet. This is how you pray, Jesus says, our Father in heaven. And maybe, just maybe, whatever that is for you, whatever that always in your face kind of stuff, maybe that begins to lose its grip on you. Maybe it begins to loosen its hold. Maybe it begins to lose its power. So as we enter into just the time of stillness, I don't know how quiet it will be. We've got kids outside and such. But I do want to invite us to sit for a few minutes. But as we think about moving into the rest of this week, and even today, to consider maybe what would it look like this week to simply begin each moment, our Father in heaven. What if whatever it is that comes up for you, what if you just paused, our Father in heaven? Right, every day, every hour, every encounter, every conversation, every burden, what about every breath? What if it became our Father in heaven? And with that, then maybe we could ask, what need is in my face today that I could release to our Father? Right? Because whatever you are facing, you are not alone. Whatever you are facing today, you are not alone. What need is in my face today that I could release to our Father? And then with that, we can think back to Barclay. Right? This prayer brings the whole of life to the presence of God, and so I wonder, am I bringing the whole of my life into the presence of God? Am I bringing the whole of my life into our Father? You could ask it this way and ask, are there areas of my life I am keeping from the presence of God? Right, again, it's not that God doesn't care. He absolutely cares. He knows your every need. And we don't begin there. We begin our Father. And with that prayer is about submitting our desires to the will of God. And so we could ask, what in my life is God inviting me to submit to Him today? Right, again, Jesus says, yes, absolutely, hold on. That stuff absolutely is important, but not there, right? We don't begin there. This then is how you should pray. Just say, our Father in heaven.